Well, hello, everyone, and welcome to another edition of the Midwest Hemp Council Weekly Podcast. I'm your host, Jason Dozier. On the program this week, we'll hear from Don Robison. Don is the seed administrator with the Office of Indiana State Chemist. He's going to talk about licensing and acreage and all kinds of great stuff coming up in a little bit. We'll also hear from Midwest Hemp Council President Justin Swanson. Justin will let us know what's going on with House Bill 1224 as it makes its way through the Indiana legislature. But first, we're going to open the program with Brandy Barrett. Brandy, I don't believe Brandy's been on the program before. Have you, Brandy?
I have not. Thank you so much for having me, Jason.
Well, then thanks for being with us here. And Brandy, I think we're going to hear from Brandy a lot more in the future. She's our membership administrator, and she does a lot of the behind-the-scenes stuff that you folks are aware of. You're just not aware that Brandy was in charge of those things. So she makes a lot of it happen, along with Jamie Campbell-Petty and Justin Swanson and everybody working together. But Brandy does a lot of work behind the scenes and helps me navigate the podcast and all that good stuff. So I certainly want to thank you, Brandy, for doing that and welcome you to the program.
Well, thank you very much, Jason. I'm certainly glad to be here, and we're really appreciative of you being such a wonderful host for our podcast. To work with.
There we go. That's what we want to hear. That's what we want to hear. So Brandy, and then the reason we're bringing Brandy on is to give updates on the events and some things going on. Technically, I was kind of supposed to be doing that, but Brandy's got way more in touch with what's going on. She's got her thumb on the pulse of what's happening out there in the hemp industry in the Midwest. So we thought, hey, let's just bring another voice on, bring Brandy on here. So, voila, here she is. Now, Brandy, we got a couple things to talk about, a couple things coming up here. The expo, the soiree, all kinds of good stuff. So I'll let you kind of take those and put them in the order they belong and tell us what's coming up here in the next couple of months.
Sure. Sounds great, Jason. I'd like to start by reminding everybody that we have the CBD Expo. It begins tomorrow. So it'll be Friday and Saturday at Indianapolis Marriott East. Mm-hmm. Midwest Hemp Council will be there with a booth, and the exhibit hall will be booth number 11. Mm-hmm. So we hope that anybody in attendance will swing by and say hello. We're going to have, if we have somebody come by that's an attendee that isn't currently a member, we will have options there for you to sign up and get a discounted rate on your membership. So it's a great time to stop by and see us and consider going ahead and becoming a member of Midwest Hemp Council.
And again, that's the 9th and 10th of April. That, again, for those listening in real time here, that would be tomorrow and this weekend. But if you're listening to this after the 9th and 10th, you've missed it, doggone it. But what else is going on there at the expo, Brandy?
At the expo, Justin Swanson will be on some panels, and several of our Midwest Hemp Council members are going to be represented on panels as well. So we're really excited about those opportunities. So there's going to be lots of educational panels people can choose to attend, several different types of vendors, including and organizations like ourselves at the exhibit hall. So lots going on here in the next 2 days. So we're excited about that. So and people can hop over for a day or for both days, and tickets are still available. If they go to the CBD Expo website, they can get them there.
Okay, and again, that's what I was going to ask. So it's what's that address?
CBDExpo.com.
Okay, CBDExpo.com. Go there right now and get that information.
Correct, yes.
And then after, so it's great to finally be able to get out and see people again and be face-to-face. So that's finally happening here with the expo. And then what else do we have coming up?
Absolutely. And that leads us right into the spring soiree, which we're really excited about because that will be the first Midwest Hemp Council in-person hosted event of 2021. So we are thrilled to be able to plan an in-person event. We hope to see several faces there. It will be May 13th, and that will take place at the Indiana Historical Society, and it will be a informal dinner event. But Justin will give a legislative update. We're going to have some guest speakers, and it's just going to be a great time for everybody to just network and catch up as we all look forward to going into the planting season coming up. Mm-hmm. And more information for that, and you can register for that through our website on MidwestHempCouncil.com. If you go over to the event tab, you will find MHC Spring Soiree, and that's where you can register for that event for tickets. And we have sponsorships available too, so that's a great opportunity for an organization to, advertise themselves and promote themselves through a sponsorship. So,
and the date on that again?
May 13th.
Okay, so anybody that did not get to the expo on the 9th and 10th, now you've got May 13th. You can get out, and that's your next event. And that, from a couple years ago, that was really neat because they've got a huge, I don't know if they call it a ballroom or the lobby or whatever that is, but that was a neat place, and I'm looking forward to getting back in there.
Absolutely. It's a beautiful facility, and we had such a great turnout a couple of years ago, so we're thrilled to have an opportunity to be planning that again this year, for sure.
Excellent. So what's happening after the soiree?
Well, then we have, you know, a break of things. We'll probably work a few events in through the fall. But the other thing that we really wanted to highlight, just to make sure that people have it marked on their calendar, is our Hemp at the Crossroads. And I know that seems like it's a far way away. It's December 1st through the 3rd in Plainfield, Indiana. Mm-hmm. But that'll be here before you know it. And we want people to be able to plan ahead, especially if we have members or non-members alike who may be traveling in for that event. So we want people to go ahead and be able to mark that on their calendar. It's going to be a great event with several, you know, breakout sessions and panels as well. We're bringing in lots of wonderful people to participate on those. And it will cover, you know, all gamuts of the industry. So there will be something for everyone there. And we're going to have exhibit space there as well for vendors. And that's another event that you can find under our event tab at our main website, MidwestHempCouncil.com. So you can find information for registering, whether you just want to attend or whether you're an exhibitor who's interested possibly in booth space or, again, possibly, you know, a sponsorship for your business. So all of those opportunities are available with that.
Yeah, and again, you don't want to wait till the last minute to, even though it is in December, it's going to be here quickly. And again, you've got a lot going on between now and then, so why not just go ahead and register if you're looking for booth space or just, again, to get the information about attending. Just go ahead and do that now before everything gets all hot and hectic.
That's right. You know, we know how it gets in the fall when you lead up to the holiday season. So if people, you know, are planning ahead and go ahead and get that marked on their calendar and make their arrangements to come in for those few days, I think they'll find it very worthwhile. It will certainly be worth their time.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. What else do we have? Is those are three big events. What else do we have going on?
Well, I also wanted to mention something that we have available right now as we talk about farmers getting ready to go into planting season. We are offering the low THC signs that we offered last year. They are a metal, you know, weatherproof sign that can go out on your field.
Mm-hmm. Those basically say, no, you cannot get high off this field. Is that what
correct.
They say?
They say no THC. This is hemp, not marijuana. And it shows a camera on it to say, you know, security's watching, just to try to deter anybody who might think that you're growing something else.
Right.
So we have those available, and those are available to the general public from our main website, again, at the little tabs at the top. If you go to regulation and legislation, mm-hmm. underneath there, you can pull up low THC field signs, and you can submit your form and payment online, and then we will ship them to you as we get the orders.
How much are those?
Those signs are $50, and then we just do a flat shipping rate of $15. Mm-hmm. So whether you order one or 20, you're going to pay just that $15 shipping fee.
Awesome. So if I want to get one and put it up in my bedroom with all my posters and stuff from high school, I mean, I don't have to have a field, do I?
No. Awesome. You can do that just for you to have some kind of memento that you're involved in this industry and that you're supporting Midwest Hemp Council and the hemp industry in general. You're welcome to do that as well.
Awesome.
So
it'll go up right next to my Led Zeppelin poster.
That sounds like a perfect place. Perfect place.
That's neat. What else do we have, Brandy?
Well, I just wanted to kind of close by telling everybody that this is a great time to join if you aren't currently a member because of these events coming up. One of the main benefits of a membership with Midwest Hemp Council is when we offer webinars or these events that you and I have discussed, if you are a member, you're going to get into those events at a discounted rate, mm-hmm. Or free on those webinars that we've been hosting. So you're certainly going to, you know, make up your cost of membership rather quickly with the benefits of attending some of these events. So if you have been on the fence and considering membership, we hope that you'll consider joining with us. We think it will really be worthwhile and that you'll see that benefit, and you'll see your money back in no time by attending some of those events and getting those discounted rates. And that's just, you know, one of the many benefits, but that off the top of my head, you know, is a big deal, especially if you think these events sound like something of interest that you plan to attend. By the time you pay the non-member rate of those, you could have gone ahead and bought your membership and been ahead. So just something for people to, you know, keep in mind. And as we explained with the expo too, if somebody's been wavering and thinking about joining, hop on over to that expo because we are going to have the discount code there. So it's a win-win. Come see us, say hello, and get signed up for a discounted membership so you can start enjoying all the benefits that we try to offer our members. And as always, we're always looking for sponsors. So if anybody listening has a business who is interested in sponsoring, we have oodles of sponsorship opportunities, whether it be through the podcast, whether it be through these in-person events. So if a sponsorship is something that's of interest to anybody, we hope that they will reach out to us and we can set up a time to talk about what we have available.
Yeah, and I can't tell you how many people before COVID hit, and it was such a shame, obviously it was a shame that COVID hit, but it was the momentum of the Midwest Hemp Council was really rolling strong there before COVID hit. And at almost every event that I attended, there was at least one or two people that I would talk to that, you know, maybe standing in the back or whatever, just kind of taking it all in, whether it be the expo or what have you, and they would inevitably, somebody would say, I had no idea that they were this organized or that there was this much information or that, I mean, they're used to other organizations and they're not used to something as profound as the Midwest Hemp Council and the information. Maybe it's just because it's all new information, so it just seems like you're getting more, but people that show up even casually, yeah, I'm just kind of looking at the hemp industry and really hadn't decided, was kind of on the fence, but then they get in there and they talk to folks like you and Jamie Campbell Petty and Justin Swanson and all the folks that are involved. And they get excited, but they also get that information. So that's something, aside from the discounts, the information that you get in person, just casually talking to people like Marty Mahan and people like that, you really can't put a price on that.
Absolutely. That's exactly right, Jason. I'm glad that you mentioned that. We work really, really hard to try to develop relationships with our members. That's really important to us. And we really feel like that's part of our mission at the end of the day. It's important that we are a credible source for accurate, timely information, whether it's about legislation or whether it's about the industry in general, or whether it's about, you know, specifically hemp licensing or planting, anything of that sort that is part of the industry. So we really try to develop, you know, personal relationships with our members, and we really want them to see benefit out of being a Midwest Hemp Council member. So we want to help them develop relationships with other members so they can work together with other, you know, areas of the industry that they're trying to find a partner with, or other businesses that they might find something in interest with. Jamie's really good about always mentioning that her word, you know, that she uses a lot is co-opetition. We really firmly believe in, you know, people in this industry needing to work together for us to make it as successful as we really believe it can be.
There we go. Brandy Barrett. Brandy, your first appearance, or I guess I think this is your first official appearance on the Midwest Hemp Council podcast. Been spectacular. You were awesome. You gave us some great information, and now we're going to do this weekly, aren't we?
Oh, I don't know about that. You know, I was filling in for Jamie this week, but I'm happy to help whenever needed. So
there we go. Well, thanks. And before I do let you go, was there anything else we need to hit on? I didn't want to cut you off prematurely.
I don't believe so. No, I think that covered everything. So.
Fantastic. Well, again, Brandy, you've done a great job. It's been a pleasure. And we're going to look forward to seeing you. You've done such a good job that now you're going to have to come back now.
Okay. You know, I think it's easier once you get that first one under the belt, right?
Right. There you go. All right. Thanks so much, Brandy, and we'll talk to you next week.
Thanks, Jason. Talk to you later.
All right. As we continue on, we're speaking with Justin Swanson. Justin is the Midwest Hemp Council president. Always got some great information for us, and I know he's been downtown. The Indiana legislature's been going on, and he's going to give us an update on what's happening there. Justin, how you doing today?
I'm great. It's always always nice when we're talking to you, because I know Friday's right around the corner.
There we go. That's always true. It's always the end of the week, which is always better than the beginning of the week. And I guess unless you have some great plans happening on a Tuesday. But at any rate, Justin, we've had a big couple of weeks here with the Indiana legislature. You've been following it very closely for us. So some big doings this week. Tell us what's going on.
So we did have our hearing on House Bill 1224. That's our craft hemp flower bill in the Senate Commerce and Technology. You know, it could have gone better, could have gone worse. You know, there was a lot of testimony from state police voicing concerns over you know, the inability to distinguish hemp from marijuana on a road, you know, if you pull someone over on the road.
And that's a legitimate complaint. I mean, I certainly understand their point of view on that.
Absolutely. You know, and I think the House tried to address those concerns with, you know, the open container language in the car. That way it helps cut out the guesswork. It doesn't matter what it is. It's
true.
You know, it'd be an infraction and you can continue to investigate as needed.
Yeah, a bag of marijuana is going to look a lot different than a sealed bag of hemp flower.
Yeah, just, I mean, as long as you're meeting, you know, our state's labeling and testing requirements, yeah, you're absolutely able to do that. So it was a little disappointing. They did not, you know, today was the day they were supposed to bring it back, or, you know, our window was for them to bring it back today and actually take a vote on the bill. That did not happen. So House Bill 1224 is dead this session. The some good news is there's a Representative Teshka has put a second reading amendment on another bill in the House. So that would insert 1224 into that. So this is kind of the last, you know, that's why I always say kind of last 2 weeks of sessions, really all that matters. I'm not terribly optimistic about, you know, the fate of 1224 this year. But I think we made really, really good progress. And I want to give a huge shout out to our members. The way that you all communicated professionally with legislators, helping educate them why the bill is so important to you individually or important to your business or community. So I just, again, want to give a huge shout out to our members. And I think, you know, again, it's disappointing we didn't get where we as far as we wanted to. But I think we made really, really good progress this year on helping explain what this market is and how it benefits Indiana.
And moving forward, you certainly, even though we're not pushing Bill 1224, as we get into the primaries and the elections moving forward, this is what you want to talk to your legislatures about. If somebody is running in a primary, there's always an incumbent, there's somebody running against them. You need to talk to both of those people and find out where they are on the on hemp and their opinion, and that's who you need to vote for. So there's more than just contacting your legislature. It's letting them know before the election that this is something that's important to you.
Hey, that's absolutely right, Jason, because if you don't ask the questions, you know, you probably won't find out where they are on these issues like hemp that, you know, that particularly are important to the individual.
Do you think this that it was not carried forward just because there was not enough enthusiasm? Was there not enough education, or did not enough people, even though we know that the lot of the members of the Midwest Hemp Council did their part, was there just not enough public clamor for this, or did they decide, you know what, we're just going to go with the law enforcement guys here and err on their side?
Yeah, and I think that's what happened, Jason. I mean, this is the first time it's happened to me. You know, state police opened the testimony in opposition, and then they actually got to close in opposition as well. So they testified twice on the same bill. You know, they ate up a lot of time during committee, so it didn't leave a whole lot of room for, you know, the supporters of the bill to explain what's going on. What I found really interesting was, so I guess, Jason, to answer your question directly, yes, I think the committee decided to side with state police on this particular issue this time. What was really interesting, there's a lot of comments and questions from some of the committee members, you know, just saying, you know, it seems like we're kind of piecemealing this cannabis policy here. Why don't we just, you know, directly ask the state police, you know, would your concerns go away if we had medical marijuana here in the state? So from that perspective, Jason, it was really interesting to see them have that public discussion, because I think this marked the first time, you know, there was a serious, you know, deliberations on the topic, even though it wasn't really relevant to our bill. So from a policy perspective, that really interests me, but it really helped drag down our bill, because I think legislators were having a tough time understanding that the hemp market in of itself is a market. And, you know, I think there's a misconception with some lawmakers that all these guys and all of our members or anyone involved in hemp is simply just waiting for medical marijuana to come to Indiana, which, you know, I'm sure is accurate for some, but it's the hemp market in the hemp industry is not going to vanish when medical marijuana comes to Indiana. I mean, you look across the country, Jason, California is one of the first states to have a medical marijuana program in the 90s. They have one of the most robust hemp markets in the country. Mm-hmm. So I thought that was an important point to make. And, you know, in fact, these are actually competitors. So some of the states that have hemp flower bans or proposed bans are medical or adult use marijuana states. And you find that those bills are actually being pushed by marijuana stakeholders, mm-hmm. because they view it as taking market share away from, you know, high Delta 9 flower versus low Delta 9 flower with a really strong cannabinoid or terpene profile.
Right. And that's something that here at the Midwest Hemp Council, and specifically this podcast, we make an effort not to convolute marijuana with hemp, because again, a lot of people package those two together in their mind and they don't separate those two. And there's a huge difference. There's a lot of people that will use CBD and use hemp products that don't go out and smoke marijuana or edibles and things like that. They don't want the high and they understand the difference. But unfortunately, to folks that don't pay attention to that or don't use the products, or maybe they used marijuana when they were younger, some of these lawmakers, that's what they picture in their mind when they see a police officer on that stand saying, well, we can't really tell the difference and it's making our job more difficult. Let's just get rid of it.
That's right. And so I think they sided with law enforcement on this just because there was kind of a question, and education just continues to be the top priority for this industry. Not only educating our lawmakers, but other stakeholders, our regulators, anyone who's curious about it, because if we're not telling the story accurately or providing information, mm-hmm. they're going to go out and find it from somewhere and it may or may not be accurate.
And Justin, speaking again, specifically about hemp, in the surrounding states, of course, a lot of the surrounding states don't have a problem with hemp flower. Do lawmakers, and of course we understand the donut concept here with the marijuana laws in the Midwest and Indiana, but it was speaking specifically about hemp. Do these lawmakers, do they ever maybe pull their head out of the sand and look at other states and say, well, why is it okay over there, but yet I'm still going to say it's not okay here? Why are police officers okay with it in other states, but not here in Indiana?
Yeah, I think they absolutely do. And, ultimately, though, I think even if they do research on what's going on in other states, they're ultimately going to, listen to what's being told to them here, you know, straight from the horse's mouth. Right. So I think that's kind of what happened here. And unfortunately, I'm not seeing a whole lot of optimism on moving forward this year. But I think this year, this growing season, we're going to make a really concerted effort to get lawmakers out to hemp fields, whether it's CBD, fiber, or grain or an indoor grow or a research center. I want to get them to the processors. So we're going to make a big push to encourage not just our members in Indiana, but, our members from all across the country to reach out to the lawmakers, invite them onto their property, invite them to the business and help them, show them what's going on. That way, to your point, Jason, they're not just relying on the the perspective of one stakeholder, rather they have the full picture and how it's benefiting benefiting the state.
Right. So obviously some not so great news today for the hemp industry in Indiana. But where do we go from here, Justin?
So session's supposed to get over April 21st, may get out sooner. Senate released their proposed budget today, this morning. So I'm sure the negotiations are well underway between the two chambers to, craft the state's budget for the next 2 years.
Mm-hmm. All right. Anything we need to do or anything we need to know about, or what are we looking at for the future?
And just real quick, while I stay in the session, there is language in Senate Bill 197 that we're working to remove. And it's an attempt to narrow the definition of our low THC hemp extract statute, which would really put our processors and our small businesses in a pretty big bind. This was an amendment that was added to a 127-page bill with only the prosecutors testifying in support of it. So it's somewhat of a sneak attack that we're trying to catch up with now. But that's really probably going to take up the rest of the session in terms of making sure that language comes out.
And so is there anything we need to do or focus our attention on?
We're going to be following up. Our members in Indiana can be in the lookout for their inboxes on some specific talking points that will be helpful if everyone reached out to the legislators and asked them to remove the language.
Okay, so while while 1224 is now in the rearview mirror at this point, we're still not done, and we still have some more work to do. So again, be on the lookout for those emails.
That's right, Jason.
All right. Once again, Justin Swanson, Midwest Hemp Council President. Justin, anything else we need to be aware of?
That's all I got.
All right. Well, that was enough for 1 week. That's for sure. All right, Justin. Thanks, and we'll look for more later.
All right. Thank you, Jason.
All right. Take care. All right, we continue on with Don Robinson. Don is the seed administrator with the Office of Indiana State Chemist. How you doing today, Don?
Hey, Jason. I'm doing great. Great. Always good to talk to you.
Fantastic. Always good to have you on the program as well. Don, of course, with Purdue University. Now, let's talk about what's going on out there for 2021 with hemp licensing in the state of Indiana, Don.
Well, we have less licenses this year than we did in the past.
Mm-hmm.
We have a lot of people in the process of licensing. Not a lot of people yet that are done, but we have a lot of people that are in the process.
Mm-hmm.
So we have roughly 100 people fully licensed at this point. Just shy of that, and I just checked before we got on the call here, and we've got about 150 that are in the process.
So we got potentially 250.
Yes, which puts us about where we were last year, which was a number higher than 2 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
I think what's really delayed people is the federal fingerprint background check requirement now.
Okay, talk about
years,
that. And we talked about that the last time you were on here, Don. So refresh us on that and tell people what they need to know about that.
Yeah, in past years, we were doing Indiana requirement. So we did an Indiana background check based on your driver's license. The federal government does not allow that. So now that our state plan is approved and we're fully commercial hemp, we don't have all the research requirements, that type of stuff. We have to do the federal fingerprint background check, which runs through the FBI.
Okay.
And that takes a little bit longer. It's something that takes more effort on the licensed applicant,
mm-hmm,
on their part.
Mm-hmm.
And we've seen that a lot of people get started with that process, and then they just say, kind of throw their hands up in the air and say, well, I don't know about that.
Well, so, now Don, let me ask you something here. What's the purpose of the fingerprint for a background check? What are they checking, and how can you get potentially rejected, or is it possible to get rejected for a hemp license based on your fingerprint? What are they looking for?
Well, the fingerprint matches up to police records.
Okay, so if you have a
conviction, felony conviction for a drug or drug related charge,
mm-hmm,
in the last 10 years, you will be rejected.
Okay, and is that the only way to get rejected based on the fingerprint?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
So the reason I ask is, of course, some people that want to get involved in the hemp industry may have a conviction in their past. They may have turned their life around, of course, and they're looking ahead. But if that's going to be a problem, they should know that up front.
Yes, they should know that up front. And we've got some people that have been patient and didn't apply the first 3 or 4 years,
mm-hmm,
and did apply this year. And we look at their background check, and the conviction was 11 years ago. So now they're in good shape.
There you go. Fantastic. Is this a complete cut and dry, black and white line in the sand?
Yes.
You're not getting
yes,
a license.
It is.
Okay.
Correct. It is a cut and dry.
Okay, so that's a problem that some folks are having, actually getting that fingerprint. Why are they throwing their hands up in the air and saying, it's just too much? I mean, I would think those are the people maybe we don't want in the industry because they don't want to follow through with detail, but why are they kind of throwing their hands up and saying, forget it?
Well, part of it is it takes about 8 to 12 weeks to get that done if you do it through the mail. Marguerite Bolt has a great video that she created of walking through from an applicant standpoint on how to get that done electronically.
Okay.
And electronically, it's done in about a week. So it's much faster.
Right. Otherwise, it's put on the back. Otherwise, it's put on the back of a mule and
yes.
walked through the city.
Yeah. Yes. Yes, it is. And it goes off to Washington, D.C., to the Department of Justice, FBI, through the mail. And like I say, they're way behind on that. Mm-hmm. But if you follow Marguerite's video, which I believe she has posted on her website, the PurdueHemp.org website.
Okay.
It's a much quicker process, and it takes about a week. Now, here's the kicker. You have to go to Indianapolis.
Okay, for the
electronic,
okay.
for the fingerprinting.
Okay, so, but the amount of weeks that you can cut off of this time by going to Indianapolis, take a day to go downtown Indianapolis versus 7 or 8 extra weeks waiting or more waiting on your return.
Yes. Right. And I'll say this, kind of to follow up on your comment that, you know, if people are not willing to do that, maybe we don't want them in the industry. If you want a license and you're not willing to take off a couple of hours to get this done in Indy, mm-hmm. And you don't say, unless you don't need it until later in the year mm-hmm. when you got plenty of time. But if you're pushing up against the planting date, and you're not willing to take a couple hours and go to Indy, you got to rethink how much you're willing to accept the risk of this industry.
Exactly. You would think. I mean, there's way more detail involved in this than just simply going to Indianapolis when you get into the when you actually get past that step. So if you're not willing to take that step, odds are this may not be the business for you.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely.
So with the licensing, go ahead, Don. I'm sorry.
Well, I was going to say another thing that we are running a report. Actually, we're having the software little portion of it rewritten. We're finding out where people stopped their draft application,
mm-hmm.
so we can reach out to them and say, "Hey, you stopped not at the background check, but you stopped at this other part of the application."
Mm-hmm.
Can we help you?
Mm.
So we're going to be reaching out to everyone who stopped the applications and say, you stopped at the point where you had to put in your grow site. Mm-hmm. Do you not know your grow site yet?
Mm-hmm.
You know, or can we, what's the deal?
Is this the first year? Is this the first year of the fingerprinting?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, it is.
Okay. And so now, do we have potentially people that have a criminal background that have been growing that now will have to stop?
Well, we might have people that have a federal record that didn't have a record in Indiana.
Mm-hmm.
But those people, we have to, there's kind of a gray area for them. If they've been growing legally in Indiana and they've been compliant, There's a gray area in the federal rule that one reading of that says because they've been legally growing, they can continue to legally grow,
mm-hmm.
no
okay.
matter what their federal check says.
Kind of a grandfather clause, only for a 1 or 2 year period.
Yes, another reading of that same sentence says no, they have to follow the same rule everybody else does. So we haven't had that situation happen yet, but when it comes up, we're going to specifically send that off to the USDA and get their approval.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Now, Don, you said we had about 100 licenses out there. We've got about 150 more applications. That puts us between 200 and 300. Are you getting feedback? Obviously, the 100 that you have, those folks are either coming back or first time growers, either one. But are you seeing
right.
more people? Are you seeing people? How do I word this? You obviously are seeing people coming back from last year and the year before, but are you seeing more new applicants, or are you seeing out of that 100 you already have, are those people that have already grown?
There are definitely some new people,
mm-hmm.
but there are a lot of people coming that have come back,
and that's good.
They just renewed their license.
Yeah. That's good,
yeah,
because that shows that regardless of the obstacles and pitfalls they had, they're coming back for more.
Yes, yep. And the industry has definitely had some pitfalls.
Mm-hmm. Oh, you don't say.
Some out of their control. you know, prices of the hemp biomass have dropped. Last week, the low price offered in the Midwest was 12 cents per pound mm-hmm. per percent CBD. Mm. And that's down from just a couple of years ago at $4 and several years ago at $6. Mm.
What do we want that to be at? Where's a good, comfortable price?
You know, the market's going to flesh that out. I saw a report last week from one of the hemp benchmarking companies that said 3,000 acres of CBD hemp would supply the entire country right now.
Oh, wow.
And that's, you know, 5% of the total CBD hemp grown. Mm-hmm. So I don't know that that's, you know, who knows if that's an accurate statement. That's just a statement somebody made.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I see.
But still, it goes to show or points out that there's a lot more grown than there is used as CBD.
Mm-hmm. Well, hopefully
market will grow.
Right. Hopefully we can flip that supply and demand into demand then supply.
Right. Right. And we think that once the Food and Drug Administration approves animal feed, then there will be a new market for it there. Mm-hmm. That's kind of in process, but it's not done yet. Mm-hmm. So we think there will be a grain additive available, and there will be what they call seed cake mm-hmm. for people that have extracted the oil, but not CBD, but the oil out of the seed. And there will be what's left over. There will be seed cake that can be fed, and then possibly also the CBD. Mm-hmm. But none of that is legal yet.
What's the holdup on that, by the way? As far as the feed for animals, why are they holding that up, and what are they still looking for? What's the potential problem with that?
Well, I don't know that there's any potential problems unless it was a higher THC content additive. But the FDA and the American Association of Feed Control Officials both have to approve hemp and hemp byproducts as a feed mm-hmm. ingredient, and mm-hmm. they both do studies on that. It doesn't take any longer to do feed than it originally would have taken to do corn. Mm-hmm. It just takes 2-3 years of studies to make sure they fully understand.
So they're not dragging their feet per se.
Correct. Okay. Yeah, they're not dragging their feet. It's just not a quick process.
Okay, so they're not necessarily looking for a reason not to allow it. They're just making sure they've covered all the reasons that could be potential problems.
That's correct. Yep.
Okay.
Now, probably the only thing that will stand out is a higher THC. That's probably one of the things that they're studying is borderline range THC. Mm-hmm. Will it affect the animal? Will it affect the meat? Will it affect the eggs if it's in chicken feed? You know, that type of stuff.
Okay. Now, Don, along with the licenses that we have coming in, what kind of acreage are we looking at? Are we going up in acreage this year, do you anticipate?
We're going way down in acreage.
Oh, okay.
Way down.
And that's probably a smart thing, I would think.
So it's a smart thing. It's more realistic. Last year, at this point, we had 8,900 acres registered. Mm-hmm. Today, we have 1,145.
And you said it only takes about 3,000 to cover the entire demand for CBD?
Country. Yes.
Mm, okay.
Yep.
So it does not hurt to go down in acreage.
It does not hurt to go down in acreage, and so the grow sites, a lot of it is still cannabinoids, but we're getting more for fiber. We got a couple for fiber, some small fiber growers. There's others that are growing for edible grains. Mm-hmm. So we're starting to get a breakdown that fits. Maybe what I think is going to eventually happen, which is that it will be eventually Indiana will be more of a fiber and grain state. Hmm. And I believe that will probably happen. Now, indoor, we've got about 600,000 square feet indoor. However, we've got one grower that listed his entire 300,000 square feet greenhouses.
Oh, okay. So, wow.
And I don't think the entire 300,000 square feet is going to be in hemp.
Okay.
So it's going to be a small portion of that.
So maybe he misunderstood the question?
Yeah. Yeah. I think he put in the entire greenhouse rather than just what's going to be involved in hemp. So we're probably sitting at about 350,000 square feet indoor, which is down from 1.76 million last year. So again, more realistic numbers. That's probably a good thing for the industry.
Okay. Now, what about growers versus handlers? Has that percentage changed much? And tell us a little bit about that.
We are actually heavier on grower than we were last year. So the people are doing a lot of their own handling now, which is probably small batch type handling. A lot of drying and processing sites out of the sites that are listed. In fact, I can give you that number here in just a second. I can give you the exact. But out of the total number of sites that have been registered, which is 245, we've got a lot of drying and processing. So we have less growing sites, more percentage of the licenses are for growing, but people aren't growing 10 sites. They're growing one or two.
Okay.
So the numbers are skewing smaller per grow site, and that makes a lot of sense. It's just completely makes a lot of sense to have a smaller batch. And so last year, the outdoor growing site was an average of about 17 acres. This year, the average is 9 acres, and that includes some larger fiber or fiber and grain. So it looks like things are trending smaller and smarter.
Well, that's the way we want to go. And speaking of smarter, the software that you guys are using, that's certainly been a huge help.
It has. We get some questions, and we've got a lady in our office who is up to speed on all the software, and she's the one that now, if there are questions on the software related work, Laura Fritz is the lady in our office to contact to get help with the software. Teresa Thompson is still the person to contact if you just have general questions on hemp and hemp growing, or myself. But with the software, we've added a specific customer service person for that. One thing I really want to hit home with today is that with the software, and now that we're a commercial state, everyone is required to report their planting.
Okay.
And that is done through the software. And there's a new video on our hemp website, the OISC hemp website, that walks them through how to report their planting. And that's whether it's indoor or outdoor. That's federally required and state required. And then also, so they need to watch that video, and they need to get, especially the indoor guys have already got crop planted. They need to get that done. The follow-up to that is that now that we are commercial, Indiana and federal government require a farm service agency field number for every grow that's in place.
Okay, and what's that
for
mean?
Every grow that will be in place. So the USDA has a division called the Farm Service Agency. And the Farm Service Agency keeps track of the growing of crops. And if you were growing corn, Jason, you would report to the Farm Service Agency, I had 10 acres of corn on this field. And then if you had the same field, but 10 acres was, or 5 acres was corn and 5 acres was soybeans, then you would have a subfield number that 5 acres of that was corn and 5 acres of that was soybeans. So hemp is in the same boat. It's being treated the same way as all other agricultural crops, and the farmer must go to, or the grower of hemp, indoor or outdoor, must go to the local county farm service agency office or contact them by phone, and they'll track down the tract number, so the official plat map tract number. Then they'll track down the farm number, then the field number, and then if that farmer or hemp grower has three varieties of hemp, there will be three subfield numbers, one for each variety. That all gets reported into the software. Then that all gets reported to the federal government, and we do the reporting to the federal government through the software.
Okay, okay. And again, anybody that has any problems with this, they just simply call and to the office, and you have somebody there dedicated to help them through that.
Yes, and the video is very thorough. It's about a 15-minute video just on those two subjects.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Oh, okay.
So it's easy to follow, and we ask people to go there first.
Okay.
And then the probably the third thing, and this is a feature that growers have been asking for 3 or 4 years, and we are very pleased to add this feature. We now have the ability for in a closed group, so just the growers and handlers, primarily the growers, we now have the ability for those growers to see what is being grown around them.
Hmm.
So we know in hemp there's a major cross-pollination problem.
Sure.
If you have male plants. So they can go to site sharing when they're logged in. And when they do that, they can share their sites. And once they log in to share their sites, they can see all of the other sites that have been shared. So we want everyone to share their sites. It's a closed group. It only goes to the growers.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So we can see it, and the growers can see it. But it does not go to the general public at all.
Okay.
And
okay.
So the first mapping portion of that shows them what is being grown within 25 miles of their site. Because we've heard, I don't know that anybody's exactly sure, but we've heard that hemp pollen can travel 25 miles.
Oh, wow.
So we put a red circle on the map, and it shows you everybody that's growing within that 25-mile radius, when they planted, what they planted for, what the use was, whether it was cannabinoids or fiber or grain, fiber and grain where you will have male pollen, and then the address of the grow and when it was planted, so they can look back and say, okay, am I going to have a problem with my pollination issues?
Hmm. Excellent.
So we
Excellent.
Really want people to do that. That's something that they were asking for. We think it's a great service for Indiana growers that helps them determine planting dates and things like that.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Well, we'll be interested to see how that turns out and what kind of information you get from that, Don.
Yeah, I think, you know, when we first heard, when the first grower who was in Terre Haute, who's continuing to be a grower, asked for that, we didn't have any way to do it. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Just wasn't possible with doing it off of a spreadsheet and
right.
Word documents. But now we've built that into the software, and it's ready to go. So we really want people to share their sites.
Excellent. Excellent. Well, Don, we've got some great information from you this week. Do anywhere else we need to go here that we need to get in before we let you go?
I don't believe so, but we want to drive home the point. Federally and state, they must report their grow sites.
Mm-hmm.
They must report their planting dates. They must cooperate with the Farm Service Agency and reach out to them. And they'll do that through the USDA Service Center in their county.
Mm-hmm.
And watch the video, report all of that. And then when they are harvesting, they will submit their harvest sample. And then they'll report their harvest dates.
Mm-hmm.
So those are all things they do through the software, which is also not only an application software, mm-hmm. but as we've talked about it before, it's a crop management software.
Right.
So we really want people to understand those processes and ask questions if they have those questions.
So if you're looking for it, if you're trying to be off the radar or secretive, then don't bother getting involved in the hemp industry, because that's not going to be allowed.
That's right. That's right. Where in the past, when it was research only, we really didn't have a way to track everything down and planting dates. Mm-hmm. We didn't even ask for planting dates. Mm-hmm. Now that's federally required and state required. So right. Now if you don't do that, you lose your license and can't grow. Mm-hmm,
mm-hmm. Well, and just one
so there's
more.
There's a pretty major penalty.
Yeah, just one more layer of protection, because again, a young industry. We've already seen and we've heard the stories of people out there getting taken advantage of and what have you. So there's a lot of layers here that you have to, you know, and a lot of hoops you have to jump through. But if you want to be a part of the business, that's just the way it's going to have to be, and that's going to be better for everybody in the long run.
Absolutely, absolutely.
There we go.
And those things we talked about in the software are all already in place, already running.
Mm-hmm. All right. And again, if you have any questions, Don and the staff is there. They have a dedicated person just for the software. So they're certainly going out of their way to help you and make this as easy as possible. So take advantage of the resources that they're making available to you. But like Don said, watch the video first, ask questions after. Don't do it the other way, and that should help the food chain there a little bit. But Don Robinson, the seed administrator, the Office of Indiana State Chemist. Don, as always, it's a great pleasure to have you on here. We always learn something, and without you, I don't know that we would be able to get all these great updates.
Well, thanks, Jason. I like doing it. It's a great way to get the word out. We try to send emails, and we know that not everybody reads their emails. And so this is another great way to get the word out and help this early stages industry get going and help people hopefully eventually make some money on it.
Well, there we go. There we go. Don, thanks so much, and let's hope for a great 2021.
Amen to that.
All right. Take care, Don. We'll talk to you soon.
All right, we'll see you.
All righty.
Bye.
All right, and that's going to do it for our show this week. We appreciate all the guests, and we hope you've been entertained as well as informed. If you'd like more information about the Midwest Hemp Council, please go to our website, MidwestHempCouncil.com. I'm your host, Jason Dozier, and we'll see you next week. So long, everybody.